We are going to go on to our third legislative imperative. We are going to talk about the Medical Devices Non-Visual Act. Again, we'll sound familiar from last year. Like I always say, don't be discouraged that we have the same imperatives. It's because legislation takes time to make it through the process. And because these things are so important to us, we're going to keep pushing. So today, we're going to start like we've done with the last two imperatives. We're going to have somebody speak about the bill for the first third, and then we'll go on and do the same things. So we're really fortunate today to have a presenter, John Perret, from the National Federation of the Blind, to talk about the bill for us.
All right, good morning. All right, good. All right, good morning, everyone. I'm glad to be here. My name is John Perret, as you just heard, and I'm with the National Federation of the Blind. The Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act is one of our priorities and one of your initiatives, and I'm glad that we're both organizations are working on this issue. It's an All right, and I hope that we've already talked to them, so you're the two of the 1-2 punch. So I'm hoping things go well. I'm going to review a little bit about, let's start with the problem. All right, so this is something, I'm a blind person myself, so I know I live with this every day as all of you, and that is that so many or most medical devices are not accessible to blind people. They're not visually accessible. I think a lot of times it's good, you should give some examples, preferably ones that you struggle to use or that you are forced to get assistance to use. Or if you mention one's diabetes, because it's just doubly ironic that that medical devices to help manage diabetes when diabetes can frequently result in loss of eyesight is something that seems like a good thing to mention about why the Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act is so important. So things like continuous glucose monitors, insulin pumps, and home dialysis are all good things to mention. On home dialysis, I know a gentleman who has a full-time job. He requires dialysis. He does home dialysis. He's lucky enough to be able to get assistance to do the home dialysis with a machine that's not non-visually accessible. And if he wasn't able to do his home dialysis, he wouldn't be able to do his job. Home dialysis allows you to do it slowly over more hours over the night. This is really the preferred method for doing dialysis, and it has better efficacy. If you go to a dialysis center, frequently they do it as fast as they possibly can, which is harder on your body. You're certainly doing it during work hours, and then there tends to be a longer recovery time from the dialysis itself because of sort of the fact that it's done quickly and not as and a method that's better for your body. So if we had more devices, I think it's important to mention that it would improve our life, including our ability to work, education, employment, and independent living. All right, so what's the solution? I always think it's helpful to come right out and say that we think the best solution is federal legislation. Obviously, that's why we're here. But sometimes staffers wonder, well, there might be more than one way to solve this problem. Well, we think the best way to solve this problem is federal legislation. So sometimes it's good to mention that. Covered devices. So one of the things that people frequently ask is, well, what devices is this bill going to cover? All right, well, it covers the vast majority of devices is the answer. The FDA classifies medical devices in a very formal system called Class 1, Class 2, Class 3. Everything falls into one of those three. Those get progressively more sophisticated, with Class 1 the least sophisticated and Class 3 the most sophisticated. Class 1 is incredibly similar, so that might be medical exam table, the chair where you get your blood pressure checked. So these are really simple things. And two, more sophisticated, could be like a blood pressure cuff. And three tend to be the most sophisticated, typically actually frequently used in a medical setting. So this would be class 2 and class 3. All right. Now, there's four categories. So that was number one. And these all sort of restrict things. Category 2 is it has to be a new application. Maybe I didn't say that very well. There's going to be four items. First was class 1, class 2. 2 is new application. So this is not in any way retroactive. This is in a over the years when we've met both organizations with members of Congress, a lot of times they've said, well, we really push back on any concept on retroactive. So this bill is not retroactive. It only applies to new applications. All right, so we've listened there. We didn't really think we were giving up that much when we said that because there's such tremendous innovation occurring right now with medical devices that the old ones are turning over quickly with new ones, and so there will be new applications. So that that was the thought, or at least we needed to get it to a point where the new ones coming out are non-visually accessible. Number three, there has to be a user interface, a digital user interface like a screen or an app. Again, this kind of makes it clear that it shouldn't be so hard to do because they're already, the device, this only applies where the device has all the electronics to drive a screen or to drive an app. And last, it can't be intended solely for use in a medical setting or solely intended for use outside the home. A lot of times, instead of saying it that way, I think it's good to just say it's intended for use in the home. All right, so that's medical devices like insulin pumps, CGMs, continuous glucose monitors, or home dialysis, or some of the other home devices that are primarily used in the home. All right, so when you're talking about this, so this bill is pretty simple. It requires the medical devices that I've just described to be non-visually accessible. And then you might ask, what does that mean? But before I get to that exactly, as you're talking to Republican offices especially, but Democratic offices also, either one, there's a couple of things that you can point out to show that this bill is not burdensome to medical device companies, especially smaller medical device companies. It's not intended to put them out of business or to be overly burdensome to those smaller innovative medical device companies. That's because the bill really has what I consider to be sort of four exceptions. All right, the first one we already really reviewed, and that is that it has to be a new application. So it only applies to new things. Number two, that it has already has the digital interface built in. It already has the electronics, so a screen or an app. Number three, it can't be an undue hardship. So if you have a small company and they say, well, this would be too expensive to try to make it non-visually accessible, they could file for an exemption. Or if it's a fundamental alteration, they could file for an exemption. This isn't really setting new law. The ADA already does this, so this was sort of just following what the ADA does. And also, I don't think we gave away very much because most of these medical device companies are very large with a ton of money. So the idea that they could, now this part is just between us. the idea that they're going to be able to do the undue hardship, now that's hard to believe they'll ever get away with that. So it sounds good, but we didn't give away much. Fundamental alteration, no, we didn't give away much. So you mentioned these four kind of exemptions, but they're almost never going to apply. So, but it makes it seem like we're very reasonable, which we are. All right, and then, all right, there is rulemaking. Now, as you probably know, under the current administration, there is a lot of pushback on rulemaking. They're saying if you're going to have a new rule, you got to get rid of a whole bunch of other ones, and a lot of people don't want rulemaking. So if somebody asks you about rulemaking, then you should, of course, tell the truth. This bill requires rulemaking. But I don't think you should bring it up. All right, so you don't necessarily need to mention that. Why don't you, you know, focus more on the other things that we've just talked about. But if they do ask, well, does this bill require rulemaking? Yes. 12 months after the bill is passed, the FDA would have to put out a notice of proposed rulemaking, and PRM, 12 months after that, it would have to do the final rule, and 12 months after that, the final rule would go into effect. So 12, 12, 12, or one year. That's kind of traditional rulemaking. The bill has that, but I wouldn't, again, mention it unless you're asked. Talk more about how this is going to make people more independent, how it's going to be reasonable to the companies developing, and I think that's going to go better. The bill's not introduced yet. We made good progress. We, being all of us in this room, made good progress. In last Congress, got nearly to 100 co-sponsors. Jan Schakowsky was the sponsor. Senator Hassan was the sponsor in the Senate. They both agreed to do it again. They just haven't dropped it yet. Senator Hassan says she really has to have a lead Republican co-sponsor for her to drop it. I'm hoping that tomorrow when you're on the Hill, you'll find a lead Republican co-sponsor for the Senate. We'll be able to tell Senator Hassan, and I think she'll then immediately introduce it. Representative Jan Schakowsky is close to wanting to introduce it, but she hasn't given out a specific time. And I know we did well getting Republicans on that last year. If we can do build up twice as many co-sponsors as we got last year, which is reasonable, then I think the idea that this bill would pass is reasonable. And I would say that is the quick overview of the bill.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, John. Okay, so we are now going to move into our segment where we once again show you what it's like to go to the Hill to talk to a staffer. So our awesome staffer today is staffer Dan Spoon. And we have two of us today who are going to go to the Hill to advocate together, because as many of you know, you're going in groups. So both myself today, Claire Stanley will be one of the advocates with Miss Connie Sims as well. So Connie and I are going to go and talk to staffer Spoon and see what happens. So, hi, Mr. Spoon. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. How are you ladies doing today? I just want to share with you, I am from the most liberal district in America.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for telling us.
My representative, his name, you can't believe this, but his name is U.R. Amazing.
Wow.
It comes from District 99, way south in an island called Key West, where everybody's liberal.
Wow.
What can I do for you ladies today?
Well, thank you so much. We'd love to tell you about an imperative bill that we're really hoping to get reintroduced this congressional session and get all the way through to accommodate those of us who are blind.
Well, that would be great. I want to first say, I am just so impressed that you all are here today. How were you able to get all the way to the Capitol without any help?
Well, you know, those of us who are blind or have low vision, we actually can live pretty independent lives. And this bill is actually a great example of that. If we have the tools we need, we're actually able to do a lot of things on our own. So can we tell you about this bill?
Most certainly. You all are just amazing.
Well, thank you. We are amazing. Thank you. We are amazing.
Well, you most certainly are. So what about this bill?
So this bill is called the Medical Devices Non-Visual Act, and it has to do with devices now that people, like never before, we could do independently at home. Things like continuous glucose monitors for people with diabetes, but even things really significant like dialysis machines or chemotherapy machines, people can do it at home now. But unfortunately, if the machine is not designed properly to be accessible for those of us who are blind or low vision, we can't use it. So we are asking that future machines are designed to be accessible for us with things like audio output, large print, maybe an app that goes along with it that we can use so that we can do it independently for ourselves.
Do you mean that we don't have these devices already? Medicare and Medicaid don't cover this?
You know, it's surprising. There are some things out there, you know, some CGMs, continuous glucose monitors, do have apps that are run parallel with them, but there's still so many things, again, dialysis machines, et cetera, that aren't available in an accessible form. And then people have to end up in things like institutions, nursing homes, hospitals, and they can't do it at home by themselves.
We don't want that.
That's right. So we're here to talk about a piece of legislation that will require the FDA to work with new manufacturers to make what we call level 2 or level 3 devices accessible. So as new devices are created and developed and manufactured, they will be designed with accessibility in mind.
Oh, is that like my mother-in-law, I think, has one of these. She has diabetes, and she has this device that she checks her sugar levels all the time. Is that what you're talking about?
That's definitely an example of one of the devices. Uh-huh. There can be all kinds of things, but that's definitely one of the examples. Diabetes is actually one of the major leading cause of blindness and low vision in the United States for persons who are adults in the adult age population. So yeah, that's definitely something that we'd love to work on because it impacts our community directly.
And you want to make that accessible for the blind where it'll talk to you.
Exactly. It could be talking. It could be audio output. It could be interacting with a smartphone because we, most of us can use a smartphone with assistive technology. It could be large print with high contrast font for people who are low vision, but different ways that people who are blind or low vision can use.
That is amazing. Tell me, is it hard to do? Would this be very expensive?
No, actually, as we develop new devices, if you, what we often describe as something like bake-in accessibility from the get-go, it's not expensive at all. You just have to think about it as you're developing the new devices. And the text of this bill says that it's not going to be retroactive, but as manufacturers and these companies develop them, they just have to make sure they're accessible from the get-go, and it won't be that expensive at all.
What was that, ma'am? I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, if you would, you know, do it in the beginning when you design these equipment, you know, devices, it's going to be cost-saving in the healthcare profession, you know, so it's going to be not as expensive in the long run. You can do all this at home, so individuals would not have to be going to the hospital or to dialysis or whatever, so we can all do this at home, and it's going to be a cost-saving for everyone.
And is the technology available? I mean, can this be done today?
Yes.
Well, why aren't we doing it?
Well, we need to get it done, and that's what we're trying to do because no one is willing to do it right now. So that's why we need the Congress to help pass this. We had, you know, legislation last year, and we're hoping to reinduce it this year, you know, and we need bipartisan. So, you know, hopefully we can get it done because, you know, we're talking about the glucose, we're talking about, you know, kidney dialysis, but it can be as simple as even a CPAP machine. You know, how many people have sleep apnea? You know, almost everyone does. And we have CPAP machines that don't have audio. So if something would go wrong on your setting, how do you fix that? We have to wait until someone else can help us or it just fix it. You know, we have to ask for assistance. So it's so important to have this done.
Well, you know, now that you mention this, one of my buddies, he's a Republican, but we still go to lunch almost every other week, and he's up in Jacksonville, Representative Rutherford, and I think he was talking about this the other day. I think his office, are any other Republicans in Florida on this bill?
You know what? I'd have to do the research right now. I don't know all the names, but we're happy to look that up for you and get back to you with it. It has had bipartisan support in previous congressional sessions. Last congressional session, it got quite a few sponsors. So yeah, it has a lot of support from both sides, and we'd be happy to look in the state of Florida and get back to you with that list.
That'd be great. You know, we got a lot of old people in Florida, And believe it or not, sometimes we even work together on things.
That's wonderful.
And we're going to have a Florida caucus here, you know, right as the session gets started. So, you know, if you could provide me any information, that would be really helpful.
We will definitely do that.
Yeah. Anytime that you want help, you know, any information, we can, you know, we have information we'll leave with you. And please feel free to reach out to us because, you know, that's the best thing is that we want to share our stories and personal experiences. And anything that we can do to help get this passed, this would be great.
Well, anything I can do. I tell you, I was walking down the street in Key West the other day, and this blind couple came by me. They were walking with those white sticks, and they headed straight to the gym. I was so surprised that they did that, but they looked like they were having fun, and they got in there and got on those treadmills, and they were sweating and everything.
I bet that woman in particular was pretty awesome working out in that gym.
I bet she was.
Well, you know what? We thank you so much, but we actually have another meeting we have to get to. But we are so appreciative for your help. And like Connie said, we will get back to you with all that information. Thank you so much. We're so appreciative.
Oh, you all are so awesome. And I'll sign anytime you need me to. Just let me know the bill number when it comes out.
Will do. Thank you.
It's nice to be the positive representative.
So yet another different experience you might see, really positive, being called inspirational as blind people. You will get more than one questions from people, I'm sure. So just another scenario you might experience tomorrow. So again, we have a little time left for questions, both about the bill and any scenarios you might face on Capitol Hill.
Hello, Anthony Chase. I just had a specific question regarding the bill. Did it cover things such as like medical device, like testing kits, such as like say COVID-19 tests?
I'll answer that if you'd like. This is John. Typically, the COVID medical devices are not categorized as medical equipment, especially the ones, or at least not class 2 or 3, except maybe the Q Health and the other one that was being distributed by the government, which name jumps out of my head right now, that had more of a network interface. But the ones that you get from the drugstore were class 1.
Although I will say, kind of in that area, and this happened to me personally, you know, with my heart condition, I was actually had to go through a 3-week heart monitoring process, you know, where you had to have this device that was hooked to your chest, and a remote control was changed out every 2 days, and it fed a smart device that then fed the information back to a data center in Texas. And that is a device that would definitely be covered, and that's the type of, you know, monitoring where when I actually got that in the office, they were very skeptical that a blind person could even go home and do it. And what was scary is that the smartphone device was not accessible. So I had to get a sighted person that would actually come and make sure that my lights were green and, you know, and I pushed something that said everything was okay that went back to the data center. And that, to me, is a prime example of something we definitely should be able to do independently.
Hi, this is Linda McLeod from California again. I have a question about the general process, and I don't know if it's appropriate here or later, but I hear that, you know, we only have a small amount of time to get across our message. Is it okay to just focus on one of the initiatives and then leave the paperwork as to the others, or, you know, I was kind of wondering.
Yeah, that's actually a great question. I feel like that's one of those questions where I say, it depends, the lawyer answer, right? If you had the chance to do a little research on your Congress member that you're talking about, and they've sponsored that bill in the past, or for instance, with this one, they have a strong history in healthcare advocacy, maybe you should spend more time on that. So if you know what caucuses they're part of, or their priorities, or their past involvement, absolutely. I also tell people, read the room. You know, if they're a responding better to one, then focus on that and leave the handouts. So again, it's not a clear-cut answer, but yeah, read the room, do some research, know who they are. If their ears seem to perk up more on one than the others, focus on the one that they respond to. So again, it's not a direct science, but just kind of feel your way through it, do your research, and see how it goes. I hope that's helpful.
Good mid-morning. My name is Jason Miller from Philadelphia. You were speaking about heart devices. They have a new EKG device that's been recently put out over the last year and a half. Are they accessible?
I don't know for sure if they're accessible. I would say generally, my experience has been they have not been. Maybe a few are. And then if they are, what sometimes happens is, a couple of the features are accessible. It's just like when you heard from the websites, and some, you know, half the buttons maybe work, but other half don't work. But that's not being accessible. So I would say generally, no.
First, I'd like to state that I am happy to say I am a kidney and pancreas transplant, and I was fortunate to only spend 4 years on dialysis, and people going on dialysis now will find themselves spending much more time on there. It's been amazing what the demand is for kidneys. In John's presentation, he didn't specify that whether they were doing hemo or through the pancreas, and when it goes through the pancreas, there are more significant problems for the blind because of the male going into the female, which can put you directly into the hospital if you hit the walls of that, and that should be brought forth, but they are pushing much more hemo at home. I also wanted to state that the success of CGMs on the market right now, it's not necessarily with the accessibility for those specific devices, but the fact that the people need also to use a smartphone in using those devices, and that has led to a lot of the, as I said, success. And if there might be any development down the road where they would be developing devices to go specifically with the CGMs that you place on your body.
Hello, this is Carla from Texas. I just wanted to share three aspects that somebody shared with me years ago, and I think they are crucial for this type of meetings that we are having. So they say to keep confidence. So walking in there, we know what we're doing. We are smart, professional, blind individuals that are going there to make a point. Clarity, especially on situations in which people are in a hurry, go to the point and express exactly the most important part of what you want to say. And the other part is control. So if things don't go the way you want them to go, control your emotions and be very professional. So that's just my 2 cents that I wanted to share with all of you.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Thank you to John for coming in.
One more quick point. Maybe two. One, so in the continuing resolution that the president just signed on Friday, that included an extension of the telehealth, the Medicare telehealth that was going to end on March 30th. Now it's scheduled to end on September, I guess it's March 31st, and now it's September 30th. We think that'd be great to make that permanent, the telehealth, but Medicare telehealth, but at least it's got it extended to September 30th. Now, that's really helpful. The telehealth is really helpful in rural settings, and this goes hand in hand with having the telehealth with having the medical devices in home. So if you live in a rural setting, that you not only could do the telehealth, but that you'd have the associated medical devices that you could use in your home. And that, and certainly we want to be able to use these medical devices ourselves, like a CGM, continuous glucose monitor, or an insulin pump, or home dialysis, or home chemotherapy, as the gentleman said. But also, we're also could be the parent of, we're blind parent of a child, and we need to be able to take care of our children. And so there, it's not that we're using it, the medical devices for ourselves, but we're using it to be sure to take care of our children. Or maybe now I know I personally had this situation where I'm a blind person, but I was trying to help my parents who are now passed away, and they need help. So if we, to participate for our own health, our children's health, or our parents' health as they become older, and this is all essential to have these non-visually accessible medical devices, especially when you live in a more rural setting, but it's everywhere, but a more rural setting especially, and this is a good thing to point out when you're talking to the members of Congress who live in rural settings, because I think they're going to agree with you. That's all I had.
That's great. Thank you so much, John. Thank you so much for coming down from Baltimore. We appreciate it. Thank you, Dan, for being a great congressman staffer for us. And thank you, Connie.